Yo, what's going on? This is Black Wall Street Chronicles, and we back at it again. I hope all of my listeners are staying safe during COVID-19 epidemic, pandemic. I call it a plague, but, you know, people want to be politically correct. Please put on your mask. I understand that is annoying. I am annoyed. How the right and the left are politicizing this COVID-19 epidemic while everybody is dying. But please put on your mask. Please social distance. We will get through this. Oh, and after this pandemic, I know that heads are going to roll. Yeah, and President Trump was trying to get slick, saying that we should hold the election. Only reason why he's saying that because all of the polls is down, naturally. Yeah, so. Anyway, today I would like to talk about a Netflix documentary that I watch. And it intrigued me because I come from New York City, born and raised. I believe the movie is called, the documentary is called New York City versus the Mafia. And it's a story of how New York City law enforcement took down the five most powerful mafia families that ran New York City ever since 1931. And this is going to be a good episode today because we're going to talk about, I'm going to close off and talking about the controversial mayor and politician of New York City, Mayor Rudolph Giuliani, who's basically responsible of utilizing the RICO laws to take down the five most powerful bosses of bosses. All right. So let's get to it. First, I'm going to talk about who the five families were. The five families are the five major New York City organized crime families of the Italian-American Mafia, formed in 1931 by Salvatore Marzano, following his victory in the Castellammare War. Marzano reorganized the Italian-American gangs in New York City into the Marzano, Profasi, Mangano, Luciano, and Gagliano families, which are now known as the Bonanno, Colombo, Gambino, Genovese, and Lucchese families. Each family had a demarcated territory, an organized structure hierarchy, and reported up to the same overarching governing entity. Initially, Marzano intended each family's boss to report to him as the Capo di Tutti il Capi, boss of all bosses. However, this led to his assassination that September, and that the role was abolished for the commission. A ruling committee established by Lucky Luciano to oversee all mafia activities in the United States and serve to mediate conflicts between families, consisting of the bosses of the five families, as well as the bosses of Chicago Outfit and the Buffalo Crime Family in 1963. Joseph Falassi publicly disclosed the existence of New York City's five families at the Falassi hearings. Since then, a few other crime families have been able to become powerful and noble enough to rise to a level comparable of close to that of the five families, holding or sharing the unofficial designation of the sixth family. In 1963, Joseph Falassi publicly disclosed the existence New York City five families at the Falassi hearings. According to Falassi, the original bosses of the five families were Charles Luciano, Tamala Gagliano, Joseph Profasi, Salvatore Marzano, and Vincent Mangano. At the time of his testimony in 1963, Falassi revealed that the current bosses of the five families were Tommy Lucchese, Vito Genovese, Joseph Colombo, Carlo Gambino, and Joseph Bonanno. These have been since the names of the most comparable used to refer to the New York Five families, despite years of overturn and change in bosses of each. The crime families historically operate throughout New York City, New York metropolitan area, but mainly within New York City. In the state of New York, the gangs have increased their criminal rackets on Long Island, Nassau, and Suffolk, and in the counties of Westchester, Rockland, and Albany. They also maintain a strong presence in the state of New Jersey. The five families are also active in South Florida, Connecticut, Las Vegas, and Massachusetts. The Manano Khan family operates mainly in Brooklyn, Queens, Staten Island, and Long Island. The family also maintains influence in Manhattan, the Bronx, Westchester County, New Jersey, California, and Florida, and have ties to the Montreal Mafia in Quebec. The Bath Avenue crew operated in the Bensonhurst section of Brooklyn, New York. The Colombo crime family operates mainly in Brooklyn, Queens, and Long Island. The family also maintains influence in Staten Island, Manhattan, the Bronx, New Jersey, and Florida. The Gambino crime family operates mainly in Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan, Staten Island, and Long Island. The family also maintains influence in the Bronx, New Jersey, Westchester County, Connecticut, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Florida, and Los Angeles. The Ozone Park Boys operate in Queens and Long Island. The Genovese crime family operates mainly in Manhattan, the Brooklyn, Bronx, and New Jersey. The family also maintains influence in Queens, Staten Island, Long Island, Westchester County, Rockland County, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Florida. The 116th Street crew operates in Upper Manhattan and the Bronx. The Greenwich Village crew operates in Greenwich Village and Lower Manhattan. The Genovese crime family New Jersey faction operates throughout the state of New Jersey. The Lucchese crime family operates mainly in the Bronx, Manhattan, Brooklyn, and New Jersey. The family also maintains influence in Queens, Long Island, Staten Island, Westchester County, and Florida. The Katia crew operates in Brooklyn, Queens, and Long Island. Lucchese crime family New Jersey faction operates through New Jersey. The Tanglewood Boys was a recruitment gang that operated in Westchester County, the Bronx, and Manhattan. The Mafia Boss Succession and the Five Families. 1909 to 1912, Sabiano. Let's start with the Marzano-Bonanno family. 1909 to 1912, Sebastio Delgado. 1912 to 1930, Nicola Cyril, he fled. 1930 to 1931, Salvatano Marzano, murder on September 10, 1931. Joseph Joe Bananas Bonanno, on October 24, 1964, Bonanno disappeared, forcibly replaced as the boss of the commission. Crime family split into two factions. In May 1966, Bonanno reappeared after 2 years, officially retires after a heart attack in 1968. Disputed 1964 to 1966, Gaspar Gasparano Di Geno, installed when Bonanno disappeared and later forcibly replaced by the commission. Acting 1966-1968, Paul Shikasa for the Di Geno factions. 1968 to 1971, Paul Shikaza in prison. 1971 to 1973, Natalie Joe Diamond Zavola died on August 28, 1973. 1973 to 1991, Philip Rusty Rustelli in prison. 1975 to 1984 and 1986 to 1991. Acting, 1974 to 1979, Carmine Cigar Galante. Murder on July 12, 1979. Acting, 1979 to 1983, Salvatore Sally Fruits Fragorona, appointed by the commission. Acting, 1987 to 1991, Anthony Old Man Sparrero, sentenced to life imprisonment in 2002, died in 2008. 1991 to 2004. Joseph Big Joe Marzano, in prison January 23, became government informant October 2004. Acting 1991-1993, Anthony Old Man Sparrow. Acting 2003-2004, Anthony Tony Green Urso, in prison January 2004. 2004-2011, Vincent Vinny Gargino Boscano, in prison November 2004 and July 2007, received a life sentence. Acting 2004 to 2006, Michael DeNoyes Moschino, in prison February 2006. Acting 2006 to 2009, Salvatore saw the iron worker Montagna, deported to Canada in April 2009, shot and killed in November 2011. Acting 2010 to 2012, Vincent Vinny TV Baldomini, imprisoned in January 2012. 2013 to present, Michael Denoyes Marquinzo, returned from prison March 12, 2019. Acting 2013-2014, Thomas D. DeFlore, arrested on January 23, 2014. Acting 2014-2015, Johnny Skyway Palacio, arrested on March 27, 2015 for violating parole. Acting 2015-2019, Joseph Josie Conramello Jr., indicted on racketeering and extortion charges on January 12, 2018. Acquitted March 13, 2019. Profasi Colombo family. In 2028 to 1928 and 1962, Joseph Profasi died of natural causes. From 1962 to 1963, Joseph Magrino forced to retire by Mafia Commission. 1963 to 1973, Joseph Colombo, paralyzed by assassination attempt. Acting 1971-1972, Joseph Yavo Covelli fled after the murder of Joe Gallio. Acting 1972 to 1973, Vincent Alloa in prison. Acting Joseph Joey Brancato in prison. 1973 to 2019, Carmine Jr. Proviso in prison, 1973 to 1979, 1981 to 1984, 1985 to 2019, died on March 7, 2019. Acting, 1981 to 1983, Alphonse Ali Boy Proceso, Carmen Presel's brother, fugitive, 1980 to 1987, imprisoned. Acting, 1983 to 1984, Gunnarano Jerry Lang Laginia, imprisoned. Acting, 1987 to 1985 to 1987, Anthony Scrappy Scarpofti, in prison. Acting, 1987 to 1991, Vincento Vic Orinia, in prison, sentenced to life. Acting, 1991 to 1993, vacant disputed leadership during the Third War. Acting 1994 to 1996, Andrew Andy Mush Russo, imprisoned March 1997. Acting 1996 to 2019, Alphonse Little Ali Boy Persiscio, Carmen Persiscio's son, imprisoned, sentenced to life in 2009. 2009 to present, unknown. Some of these mafia families are still around, huh? That's interesting. 1900s to 1910. Ingazzanano the Wolf Lupo, in prison in 1910. 1910 to 1921. 1910 to 1928, excuse me. Salvatore Toto de Aquila took over the Brooklyn Camorra in 1916 and merged it with Al Manuel's gang, forming the largest family in New York. He was killed on the orders of boss Jules Massarena in 1928. 1928 to 1930, Manfred Alfred Menino killed in the Casa Mali War in 1930. 1930 to 1931, Frank Scalise demoted after the murder of boss of all bosses, Salvatore Marzano. Vincent Margano disappeared in 1951, alleged killed on the orders of underboss Albert Astanza. He ruled from 1931 to 1951. 1951 to 1957, Albert Astanza murdered in October 1957 on orders of Carlo Gambino. 1957 to 1976, Carlo Gambino died of natural causes in 1976. Paul Castellano, acting boss for Gambino, became the official boss after his death. 1976 to 1985, Paul Castellano murdered in December 1985 on the orders of Capo John Gotti. John Gotti, in prison 1990, died in 2002. Yeah, the Teflon Don. John A. Gotti, in prison in 1990, later retired. Acting 1990 to 2001, Peter Gotti, promoted to official boss. Peter Gotti, 2001 to 2011, in prison in 2002, serving life sentence. Acting 2002 to 2005, Arnaldo Scuteri. Acting 2005 to 2008, John DiMaggio. 2011 to present, Domenico Italian Don Califfo. Acting 2015-2019, Frank Cowley, murder in March 2019. Acting 2019 to present, Luciano Manino. Is this the Gambino family? Yeah, these guys are still around. The Luciano Genovese family. 1890 to 1909, Gruspetti the Clutch Hand Moreto in prison. 1910 to 1916, Nicholas Nicomarato Tenevella and murdered on September 7, 1916. 1916 to 1920, Vincent Terranova stepped down, becoming underboss. 1920 to 1922, Giuseppe the Clutch Hand Moreno stepped down, becoming underboss to Mazzarella. 1922 to 1931, Giuseppe Gelda Boss Massaretta, murder on April 15, 1931. 1931 to 1946, Charles Lucky Luciano, in prison in 1936, deported in Italy in 1946. Acting 1936 to 1937, Vino Genovese fled to Italy in 1937 to avoid murder charge. Acting 1937 to 1946, Frank the Prime Minister Costello became official boss after Luciano's deportation. 1946 to 1957, Frank the Prime Minister Costello resigned in 1957 after Genovese Delgante assassination attempt. 1957 to 1969, Vito Don Vito Genovese, in prison in 1959, died in prison in 1969. Acting 1957 to 1962, Anthony Tony Bender Strollo, disappeared in 1962. Acting 1962 to 1965, Thomas Tommy Ronnie Eboli became front boss. Acting 1965 to 1969, Philip Benny Squint Lombardo became the official boss. 1969 to 1981, Philip Benny Squint Lombardo retired in 1981, died of natural causes in 1987. In 1981 to 2005, Vincent Ching Gigante, in prison in 1997, died in prison on December 19, 2005. Acting 1989 to 1996, Liberato Barney Bellano, promoted to street boss. Acting 1997 to 1998, Dominic Quiet Dom Celeso suffered heart attack and resigned. Acting 1998 to 2005, Matthew Maddie the Horse and Lanto resigned when indicated in July 2005. Acting 2005 to 2008, Danny the Lion Leo in prison 2008 to 2013. 2010 present, Luriano Barney Bellumillo. Galliano Lucis family. 1922 to 1930, Giuliano Tommy Renia murdered on February 26, 1930. 1920, Bonaventura Joseph Pinzendo, murdered on September 5, 1930. 1930 to 1951, Tommaso Tommy Giuliano, retired in 1951, died on February 16, 1953. 1951 to 1967, Giordano Tommy Brown Lucis died on July 13, 1967. Acting, 1966 to 1967, Carmine Tomati stepped down. Acting, 1967, Ettore Eddie Coco stepped down. 1967 to 1973, Carmine Mr. Gibbs Demente in prison in October 1973. 1973 to 1986, Anthony Tony Dux Carlalo, indicted on February 15, 1985, convicted on November 19, 1986 in the Mafia Commission trial, and sentenced on January 13, 1987 to 100 years in prison. Yeah, I will be talking about the Mafia Commission trial a little bit later. In 1986, present Vittoriano Vic Amunso, arrested in 1991, received a life sentence in January 1993. Acting 1990 to 1991, Alphonse Little Al DeSocco became a member of the ruling panel. Acting 1995 to 1998, Joseph Little Joe DeFelte, in prison in 1998. Acting 1998 to 2000, Stephen Wonderboy Clelia, in prison of September 6, 2000. Acting 2000 to 2003, Louis Beguez Daljon, in prison March 2003, received life sentence in January 2004. Acting 2009 to 2017, Matthew Matt Madonna, indicated 2007 and 2009, in prison 2015 to present, indicted in 2017. Acting 2017 to present, Michael Big Mike DeSantis. Okay, what we're going to do is I'm going to take a break and I'll be back with you in 5 minutes. This is Black Wall Street Chronicles, and we're back at it again. So, I just earlier named the five mafia families and who was the leaders of the five mafia families all the way up until today. The mafia, Italian mafia, is over 100 years old. And it seems that the mafia is actually still around to this day. They're not really active, but they're still around. Now, I'm going to read about how mafia is depicted in pop culture. And after that, I am going to talk about the Mafia Commission trial, where the five mafia families got taken down. And the documentary that I was talking about earlier is called Fear City, New York City versus the Mafia. And I'm going to give you the details of that trial. So, factual and fictional details of the history of crime families have been used in a vast array of media, such as literature. The Mario Puzo's The Godfather. The five families are represented by the Barzinis, the Corleones, Cuneros, Scrassis, and Tagliellas. Francis Ford Coppola's The Godfather makes use of the same fictional families in the novel. Harold Ramis' crime comedy Analyze This, 1999, begins with a flashback to the 1957 Appalachian meeting of the five families in the wake of the assassination of Albert Anastasia. Television. The HBO series Boardwalk Empire portrays the rise of Charles Luciano to power and his betrayal of both John Messina and Salvatore Marzano during the rise of the American Mafia. A recurring plot arc in the CBS series Person of Interest concern of campaign of monster called Alassis to dominate the Italian Mafia in New York. In particular, the dolls of the five families are primarily depicted in the first season episode of Flesh and Blood, April 5th, 2012. In the HBO series The Sopranos, the Mio crime family, based on the De Cavante family from New Jersey, works with the Luprastasi crime family in Brooklyn, one of the crime families in New York. Subject of the 2020 Netflix documentary Fear City, New York versus the Mafia. Video games. The 2008 video game Grand Theft Auto 4, one of my favorite Grand Theft Autos, by the way, set in Liberty City, a parody of New York, features five family mafia called the Gambardi, Ancelotti, Messina, Pavano, and Lupicella. They together formed the Commission. Another family called Pregino operates in Albany, the in-game counterpart of New Jersey. Okay, and this is how the mafia is depicted in pop culture. Now, I want to talk about the documentary that I watch. You should watch it too. It's on Netflix. It's called Fear City, New York versus the Mafia. And it inspired me to do this particular podcast episode. Okay. Fear City, New York versus the Mafia is an American true crime web docuseries about the New York City's five families, Gambino, Colombo, Bonanno, and Lucchese, and Genovese crime families. The series is from the point of view of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, detailed how the implementation of wiretaps were able to bring down the mob in the Mafia Commission trial. The series, released on Netflix July 22, 2020, also featured cameos from Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump. Yeah, release. Now, I'm going to read up on a Mafia Commission trial. Mafia Commission trial. And what I'm looking at on Wikipedia.com, they show the mugshots of Paul Castellano Anthony Salano, and Anthony Corallo. The Mafia Commission trial in full, United States versus Anthony Salano, was a criminal trial in New York City, United States, that lasted from February 25, 1985 until November 19, 1986. Using evidence obtained by the FBI, 11 organized crime figures, including the heads of New York's so-called five families, were indicted by United States Attorney Rudolph Giuliani under the Racketeer Influence and Corruption Organizations Act, also known as the RICO laws. Those are the same RICO laws, ladies and gentlemen, that was used to take down Tekashi 69 and force him to squeal on his blood counterparts. The RICO laws was actually created by Richard Nixon. I'm going to talk about the RICO laws a little bit later. On charges including extortion, labor, racketeering, and murder, eight of them were convicted under RICO, and most of them were sentenced to 100 years in prison on January 13, 1987, the maximum possible sentence under that law. The case struck a blow against the commission, a ruling committee consisting of the New York Five Families bosses that meet to resolve disputes or discuss criminal activities. The Time magazine called this the case of cases, possibly the most significant assault of the infrastructure of organized crime since the high command of the Chicago Mafia was swept away in 1945. And quoted Giuliani stating intention, our approach is to wipe out the five families. In 1983, the Federal Bureau of Investigation recording several wiretap conversations of Rob Scorpio extorting money from contractors. Scorpio was the president of the Cement and Concrete Workers District Council and Labor's International Union of North America from 1977 to April 1985. Yeah, that's true. The Mafia did control the construction union. That's crazy. During this time, Scorpio used his position to extort money from cement contractors in New York return for the large construction contracts and labor peace. Contracts between $2 million and $15 million were reserved for a club of contractors called the Concrete Club, which was selected by the commission. In return, the contractors gave 2% kickback to the contract value to the commission. Gennaro Langella supervised various labor rackets for the Colombo crime family, including their stake in the Concrete Club and extorted control over various labor unions, including Cement and Concrete Workers District Council, Local 6-8. Andy Sonorano also had a hidden controlling interest in SNA Concrete Corp and the Transit Mixed Concrete Corp. In the early 1980s, Anthony Corallo unwittingly provided the government with evidence that will all but end his career. Over the years, Corallo and Salvatore Alano established a stranglehold on the waste hauling businesses of Long Island. To gather evidence against Alvanino, members of the New York State Organized Crime Task Force used undercover informant Robert Kubiak, the owner of a Suffolk County, New York garbage hauling business. Since the 1970s, Kubiak had refused to participate with the mob control of waste hauling business and suffered extensive harassment as a result. In 1982, Kubiak agreed to wear a surveillance device during the meetings with the mobsters. Although Kubiak was able to get close to Alvano himself, the information Kubiak gathered eventually persuaded a judge to allow a wiretap of Alvano's home phone in Neuquick, New York. The home phone tap was also disappointing to the agents. However, it did reveal that Alvano was driving Corano all around all day in Alvano's car. In 1983, members of the New York State Organized Crime Task Force installed electronic surveillance device inside the dashboard of Alvano's Jaguar while he and his wife were at a dinner dance. Agents had listened to many conversations between Corleone, Alvano, and other mobsters as they drove around in the city. For this recorded conversations, OCTF learned the commission's internal structure, history, and relations with other crime families. These conversations were shared with federal prosecutors and provided them with invaluable evidence against Coriano and other family bosses in the Mafia Commission trial. The indictment and arrest on February 25, 1985, including nine defendants. Paul Big Paul Castellano, boss of the Gambino crime family. Anthony Fat Tony Sardiano, boss of the Genovese crime family. Anthony Tony Ducks Coriano, boss of the Cheese crime family. Philip Rusty Rostelli, boss of the Bonanno crime family, as well as their subordinates. Aliano Desacross, Gambino family underboss. Galeano Jerry Lang Lagenia, Colombo family acting boss and underboss. Salvatore Tomic Sartegno, Lachis family underboss. Christopher Christie Tick Fernunani, Lachis family cashier. Ralph Little Ralphie Scorpio, Colombo family soldier, added shortly after. Carmine Jr. Prestischio, boss of the Colombo crime family. Stefano Caglione, Bonanno family cashier. Anthony Brunello and Duriscato, Bonanno family capo. On February 25, 1985, nine New York Mafia leaders were indicted for narcotics trafficking, loan sharking, gambling, labor racketeering, and extortion against construction companies. On July 1, 1985, the original nine men, with the addition of two more New York Mafia leaders, pleaded not guilty to a second set of racketeering charges as part of the trial. Prosecutors aimed to strike at all the crime families at once using their involvement in the commission. On December 2, 1985, De La Crosse died of cancer. Castellano was later murdered on December 16, 1985. According to Colombo Hitman and FBI informant Gigi Scarpia, Proceso Gambino boss John Gotti backed a plan to kill the lead prosecutor and future New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani in 1986, but it was rejected by the rest of the commission. Damn, John Gotti was going to kill Rudolph Giuliani, the Teflon Don, damn. Wow, that's crazy. In the early 1980s, the Bonanno family were kicked off the commission due to the Donnie Brasco infiltration. Although Rostelli was one of the men initially indicted, this removal from the commission actually allowed Rostelli to be removed from the commission trial, as he was later indicted on separate labor racketeering charges. Having previously lost their seat on the commission, the Bonannos suffered less exposure than the other families in this case. Okay. When the lawyers of the accused mafioso reviewed the evidence, they realized their client's chances at trial was slim. However, they sounded out possible plea bargaining terms. Giuliani demanded that the defendants plead guilty to the stiffest charges in the indictment, which carried sentence that they would all have assured they would die in prison. The seven defense lawyers, as well as Priscilla's legal advisor, Priscilla was acting as his own lawyer, then decided to admit that the mafia and the commission existed. But to argue that the membership of the mafia or being a boss were not in and themselves evidence of criminal activity. The mafioso initially balked, believing it would amount to a violation of the code of Amaltura. However, the lawyers impressed upon the clients that they will not credibly deny the existence of the mafia in the face of all record references to it. Ultimately, the mafioso agreed to the strategy as long as they did not have to personally admit that the mafia existed. Hence, during the opening statement, Santoro's lawyer, Samuel Dawson, told the jury that there was no question that the mafia exists and it has members, but asked, can you accept that just because a person is a member of the mafia, that doesn't mean he has committed the crime charged in this case? It was the first admission in open court that the mafia existed. Eight defendants were convicted of racketeering on November 19, 1986. With the exceptions of Deliciso, was convicted of murder, and they were sentenced to January 13, 1987 as follows. Anthony Fat Tony Soleano, 100 years in imprisonment and fined $2,400,000. Antonio Tony Dos Carvalho, Boss Lucci's family, 100 years in imprisonment and fined $240,000. Salvatore Tomi Sartanio, under Boss Lucci's family, 100 years in imprisonment and fined $250,000. Christopher Christie Tick Fortunati, Carcerazia Lucci's family, 100 years in imprisonment and fined $240,000. Carmine Jr. Francisco, Boss Colombo family, 100 years in imprisonment and fined $240,000. Gennaro Jerry Lane Legagna, acting under Boss Colombo family, 100 years in imprisonment and fined $240,000. Ralph Ralphie Scorpio, 100 years in imprisonment and fined $240,000. Anthony Bruno Inglaclasio, Capo Bonanno family, 40 years in imprisonment and fined $50,000. Soleano had initially been billed as the boss of the Genovese family. However, shortly after the trial, Soleano's longtime right-hand man, Vincent the Fish Carfaglio, turned informant and told the FBI that Soleano had been a front for the real boss, Vincent de Cingangiante. Carfo also revealed that the Genovese family had keeping up with the rules since 1969. However, according to New York Times organized crime reporter Cilla Ross, this would not have jeopardized Soleano's conviction at the commission trial of his 100-year sentence. In this book, Five Families, Rahab noted that Soleano had been tried and convicted by specific criminal acts, not for being the Genovese boss. Vincent DeGin. Let's see. Yeah. So the real boss of this particular crime family was Vincent Louis Gigante. So Vito Genovese. Let's see. Gigante was the real boss of the Genovese crime family, but he never was convicted of anything. They've been keeping up this as a ruse for a very long time. This is actually a smart move. He never got this guy. What's his name? Yeah, this guy. Let's go back. Vincent the Fish turned informant. Keeping up this rules that Vincent de Cingangiante, this was the real boss of the Genovese family, but he never got caught. That's interesting. Okay, that's it on the commission trial that took down the five families of the mafia in New York City. The thing that's telling about this part is that how John Gotti, the Teflon Don, actually wanted to kill off at Mayor Rudolph Giuliani at one time. Okay. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk about Rudolph Giuliani, the man responsible for taking down the five families, who later became the mayor of New York. And we're also going to talk about President Trump, because these two individuals are tied in this situation. I'll be back in about 5 minutes. This is Black Wall Street Chronicles, and we're back at it again. Thank you for your support. I recently talked about the five mafia families. I talked about the people who's been indicted in the New York Mafia Commission trial in the 1980s. Now, we're going to talk about the RICO laws, and we're going to talk about how we're going to talk about Rudolph Giuliani and how Rudolph Giuliani used the RICO laws in such a way that he was able to take down this criminal organization. So, let me go to my notes. And we're going to talk about the RICO laws. By the way, my first introduction to the RICO laws ever, like actually seeing it active, is The Dark Knight. When Harvey Dent wanted to organize, use the RICO laws to take down all of the mafia families. And how Batman had to go all the way to China and had to pull the guy who was basically the holder of all the mafia's money back. And how Harvey Dent and Batman and Commissioner Gordon was able to arrest everybody. And how the mafia was such in a position they turned into a criminal terrorist that they did not understand. And that is my introduction into the RICO laws. This is the first time I've ever seen it. Of all places, a comic book movie. And it's funny because Batman, the comic book, is basically, was created at the same time as those noir movies, you know. And those noir movies always depict criminal syndicates and Italian mafia and detective work. So I guess it all goes hand in hand, right? Christopher Nolan understood the character and the story tropes. Anyway, that's enough about comic books. So, we're going to talk about Racketeer Influence and Corruption Organizations Act, also known as the RICO laws. The RICO Act is a United States federal law that provides for extended criminal penalties and a civil cause of action for acts performed as part of an ongoing criminal organization. The RICO Act focuses specifically on racketeering and allows the leaders of a syndicate to be tried for the crimes they ordered to do or assisted them into doing. Closing perceived loophole that allowed a person who instructed someone else to, for example, murder to be exempt for the trial because they did not actually commit the crime personally. So, RICO was enacted by Section 901A of the Organized Crime Control Act of 1970 and is codified at 18 U.S.C. Chart 96 as 18, an advisor to the, as 18 U.S.C. SS 1961 to 1968. G. Robert Blakely, an advisor to the United States Government Operations Committee, drafted the law under close supervision of the committee's chairman, Senator John Little McLean. It was enacted Title IX of the Organized Crime Control Act of 1970 and was signed into law by Richard M. Nixon. While its original use in the 1970s was to prosecute the mafia as well as others who are actively engaged in organized crime, its later application has become widespread. Beginning in 1972, 33 states adopted state RICO laws to be able to prosecute similar conduct. Under RICO, a person who has committed at least two acts of racketeering activity drawn from a list of 35 crimes, 27 federal crimes, and 8 state crimes within a 10-year period can be charged with racketeering if such acts are related in one of four specific ways to an enterprise. Those found guilty of racketeering can be fined up to $25,000 and sentenced to 20 years prison per racketeering count. In addition, the racketeer must forfeit ill-gotten gains and interest in any business gained through a pattern of racketeering activity. When the U.S. attorney decides to indict someone under RICO, They have the options of seeking pretrial restraining order and Justin to temporary seize the defendant's assets and prevent the transfer of potentially forfeitable property, as well as require the defendant to put up a performance bond. This provision was placed in the law because the owners of mafia-related shell corporations offer apprehended with the assets. Our injunction of performance bond ensures that there is something to seize in the event of a guilty verdict. In many cases, the threat of a RICO indictment can be forced defendants to plead guilty to lesser charges, in part because the seizure of assets would make it difficult to pay a defense attorney. Despite its harsh provisions, RICO-related charges are considered easy to prove in court since it focuses on the pattern of behavior as opposed to criminal acts. RICO also permits to provide individual damage in his business or property by a racketeer to file a civil suit. The plaintiff must prove the existence of an enterprise, the defendant are not the enterprise, in other words, the defendant, and the enterprise are not one and the same. There must be one of the four specified relations between the defendant and the enterprise. Either the defendant invested the proceeds of the pattern of racketeering activity into the enterprise, or the defendant acquired or maintained an interest in or control of the enterprise through the pattern of racketeering activity, or the defendant concluded or participated in the affairs of the enterprise through the pattern of racketeering activity, conspired to be done due to one of the above. In essence, the enterprise is either the prize, instrument, victim, or perpetrator of the racketeers. A civil RICO action can be filed in state or federal court. Both the criminal and civil components allow the recovery of treasurable damages, damage the triple amount of actual compensatory damages. Although his primary intent was to deal with organized crime, Blakely said the Congress never intended to apply to the mob. He once told Tom, "We don't want that set of rules for people whose collars are blue and whose names end in vowels. Another set of those white collars are white and have Ivy League diplomas." So, federal government did not want to create RICO law to take down these blue-collared criminal organizations. They actually wanted to take down individuals like Jeffrey Epstein. That's interesting. Initially, prosecutors were skeptical of using RICO, mainly because it was unproven. The RICO Act was first used by the U.S. Office in Southern District of New York of September 18, 1979, in which the United States v. Scotto, who was convicted on charges of racketeering, accepting unlawful labor payments and income tax evasion, headed the International Longshoremen's Association during the 1980s and 1990s. Federal prosecutors used the law to bring charges against several mafia figures. The second major success was the Mafia Commission trial, which ran from February 25, 1985 through November 19, 1986. Rudolph Giuliani indicted 11 organized crime figures, including the heads of New York's so-called five families under the RICO Act, on charges including extortion, labor racketeering, and murdering for hire. Time magazine called this the cases of cases, probably the most significant assault on the infrastructure of organized crime since the high command of the Chicago Mafia was swept away in 1943. And quoted, Giuliani's stated intention, "Our approach is to wipe out the five families. Gambino crime family boss Paul Castellano evaded conviction when he was his underboss. Thomas Bellotti were murdered on the streets of Midtown Manhattan on December 16, 1985. However, the three heads of the five families were sentenced to 100 years in prison on January 13, 1987. Genovese and Colombo leaders Tony Soriano and Carmine Presquillo received additional sentences in separate trials, with 70-year and 39-year sentence to run consecutively. He was assisted by three assistant United States attorneys, Michael Chertoff, the eventual second United States Secretary of Homeland Security, co-author of the Patriot Act, John Savarese, now partner of Rachetel, Lippin, Rosen, and Cox, and Jill Cesars, a later deputy chief of the criminal division of the Southern District of New York, and now managing director in the legal department of Goldman and Sachs. Yeah. That's interesting. Co-author of The Patriot, Johnson, now a partner of Watchtower, Lippin, Rosen, and Cox, Gilchrist, and later deputy chief of the criminal division of the Southern District of New York, and now managing director in the legal department at Goldman and Sachs. Interesting. Look like the white collar guys have hired a very powerful lawyer. State laws. Beginning in 1972, 33 states, as well as Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands, adopted state RICO laws to cover additional state offenses under a similar scheme. Under the law, meaning of racketeering activity set out 18 U.S.C. 1961, as currently amended, includes any violation of state statutes, including gambling, murder, kidnapping, extortion, arson, robbery, bribery, dealing obscene matter, or dealing in a controlled substance or illicit chemical, as defined in the Controlled Substances Act. Any act of bribery, counterfeiting, theft, embezzlement, fraud, dealing in obscene matter, obstruction of justice, slavery, racketeering, gambling, money laundering, commission of murder for hire, and many other offenses covered under the Federal Criminal Code. Embezzlement of union funds, bankruptcy fraud or securities fraud, trust trafficking, long-term and elaborate drug networks can also be prosecuted under the Continuing Criminal Enterprise Statute. Criminal copyright infringement, money laundering and related offenses, bringing in, aiding, or assisting aliens and illegally entering the county, if the action was for financial gain, acts of terrorism. Pattern of racketeering activity requires at least two acts of racketeering activity, one of which occurred in the effective date of this chapter and the last of the which occurred within 10 years, including any of imprisonment. After the commission of a prior act of racketeering activity, the U.S. Supreme Court has instructed federal courts to follow the continuity plus relationship test in order to determine whether the facts of a specific case gave rise to an established pattern. The illegal acts compromising a pattern are called predicate offenses. Predicate acts are related if they have the same or similar purposes. Results, participants, victims, or methods of commission authorized are interrelated by distinguishing characteristics or not isolated events. Continuity is both a closed and open-ended concept, referring to either a closed period of conduct or to past conduct that by its nature projects into the future with a threat of repetition. Okay. Let's talk about the famous cases of RICO cases, right? Now, looking at some of these cases look very familiar. So let's get started. First famous case that it says here on Wikipedia is the Hell's Angels Motorcycle Club. In 1979, the United States federal government went under Sonny Barger and several members of the associates of the Oakland chapter of the Hell's Angels using RICO in the United States versus Barger. The prosecution team attempted to demonstrate a pattern of behavior to convict Barger and other members of the club of RICO offenses related to guns and illegal drugs. The jury acquitted Barger on the RICO charges with a hung jury on the predicate acts. There was no proof of it part of the club potency. As much as they tried, the government could not come up with any incriminating minutes from any of our meetings mentioning drugs and guns. So the Hell's Angels got acquitted. Latin Kings. On August 20th, 2006, in Tampa, Florida, most of the state leadership members of the street gang, the Latin Kings, were arrested in connection with RICO conspiracy charges to engage in racketeering and currently await trial. The operation called Broken Crown targeted statewide leadership of Latin Kings. The raid occurred at the Caribbean American Club, along with Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office, Tampa Police Department, the State Attorney's Office, FBI Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms were involved in the operation. The Latin Kings in Chicago had been targeted in 2009. The national leader, Augustin Zambrano, was sentenced to, in 2012, to 60 years on 3 counts. Yeah, that's Diablo. That's what they call him. That's his nickname. The head of the Latin Kings in Chicago, the head enforcer, Augustin Zambrano, I think his nickname is Diablo, but I'm not sure. Gil Desir, Louisiana Commission of Agriculture and Forestry, Gil Desir in office. From 1976 to 1980, faced indictment with violations of both the Hobbs and the RICO laws. He was accused of compelling companies doing business with his department to make campaign contributions on his behalf. On September 23, 1980, the Baton Rouge-based United States District Court of the Middle District of Louisiana convicted Desir of 5 counts of extortion and racketeering. The sentence of 10 years imprisonment later upgraded to 18 when other offenses were determined, and the $25,000 fine was suspended pending trial, and Desir remained free on bail. He eventually served nearly 4 years until a presidential communication freedom in 1986. So he was pardoned. He was doing extortion and racketeering in agriculture and forestry? Damn. Okay, that's weird. I didn't know they use racketeering and extortion when it comes to farming and taking care of forests. That's weird. Key West Florida Police Department. Around June 1984, the Key West Police Department, located in Monroe County, Florida, was declared a criminal enterprise under the federal RICO statutes after a lengthy United States Department of Justice investigation. Several ride-hanging officers of the department, including Deputy Police Chief Raymond Kasselmeyer, were arrested on federal charges of running protection racket for illegal cocaine smugglers. At trial, a witness testified he relayed delivered bags of cocaine to the deputy chief's office at City Hall. Damn. You have a whole police department selling drugs. Michael McLean, I've heard this. On March 29, 1989, American financier Michael McLean was indicted on 98 counts of racketeering and fraud relating to an investigation into an allegation of insider trading and other offenses. This was the white collar people that they talked about originally that they wanted to go after. McKillian was accused of a right-wing network of contacts to manipulate stock and bond prices. It was one of the first occasions that a RICO indictment was brought against an individual with no ties or organized crime. McKillian pleaded guilty to 6 lesser felonies, securities fraud, and tax evasions rather than risk spending a life in prison and ended up serving 22 months in prison. McKillian was also ordered banned for life for the securities industry. On September 7, 1988, McKillian's employer, Drexel Bernard Lambert, was threatened with RICO charges. Respondent Superior, the legal doctrine that corporations are responsible for their employees' crimes. Drexel avoided RICO charges by entering an offer plea to lesser felonies of stock parking and stock manipulation. In a carefully worded plea, Drexel said it was not the position to dispute the allegations made by the government. If Drexel had been indicted under RICO statutes, it would have had to post a performance bond of up to $1 billion to avoid having its assets frozen. This would have taken precedence of all the other firms' other obligations, including the loans that it provided to 96% of its capital base. If the bond had to be paid, its shareholders would have been possibly wiped out. Since banks will not extend credit to a firm indicted under RICO, any indictment would have put Drexel out of business. At least one estimate, RICO indictment would have destroyed the firm within a month. Years later, Drexel President and CEO Fred Joseph said that the Drexel had no choice but to plead guilty because a financial institution cannot survive a RICO indictment. I heard about this case. Now here's another one. This one is crazy. Major League Baseball. This got to be about the steroids. In 2001, Major League Baseball team owners voted to eliminate two teams, presumably the Minnesota Twins and Montreal Expos. In 2002, the former minority owners of the Expos filed charges under the RICO gas against MLB Commissioner Bud Selig and former Expos owner Jerry Loretta, claiming that Selig and Loretta deliberately conspired to devalue the team for personal benefit in preparation to move. Wow, I thought this was about steroids. If found liable, Major League Baseball could have been responsible for up to $300 million in punitive damages. The case lasted 2 years, successfully stalling the Expos due to Washington or contraction during the time. It was eventually sent to arbitration, where the arbiters ruled in favor of Major League Baseball, permitting the move to Washington to take place. I didn't know that the head of Major League Baseball was accused of a RICO charge. Yeah, so let's talk about the Los Angeles Police Department. April 2000, Federal Judge William J. Ray in Los Angeles, ruling one Rampo scandal case, said that the plaintiffs could pursue RICO claims against the LAPD. An unprecedented finding. The idea that a police organization could be characterized as a racketeering enterprise shook up City Hall and further damaged the already tarnished image of the LAPD. However, in July 2001, U.S. District Judge Gary A. Finesse said that the plaintiffs do have standing to sue the LAPD under RICO because they are alleging that personal injuries rather than economic or property damage. That's weird. Mohawk Industries. On April 26, 2006, the Supreme Court heard Mohawk Industries, Inc. v. Williams, which concerned the sort of corporation fell under the scope of RICO. Mohawk Industries had allegedly hired illegal aliens in violation of RICO. The court was asked to decide whether Mohawk Industries, a long recruiting agency, constitutes an enterprise that could be prosecuted under RICO, but in June of that year dismissed the case and remanded it into Court of Appeals. Gambino crime family. John Gotti and Frank Lasciano was convicted on April 2, 1992 under RICO Act and later sentenced to life in prison. In Tampa, October 16, 2006, four members of the Gambino crime family, Capo Ronald Tuticio, Tilly Scaglione, Stephen Carcione, and Anthony Mercarcione, and associate Kevin McMahon, were tried under RICO statutes and found guilty and sentenced to life in prison. Yeah, I already talked about the five crime families. Alright. And that is the history of the most famous cases of RICO. Now, let me see. Yeah. So, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, I'm going to close it off. I'm going to do a part two of this episode later on, because it seems that I might have to do a whole episode dedicated to Mayor Rudolph Giuliani. So when we come back in I'll take a 5-minute break, and when I come back, I'm going to talk about the plans for next week, the plans for my podcast in the future, and where you can follow me if you want to look out for other information in the future. Thank you. This is Black Wall Street Chronicles, and we're back at it again. Like I said earlier, I'm going to have to do a part two of this episode, and because we're going to have to talk about Rudolph Giuliani and President Trump's involvement with the five families and how controversial we already know about President Trump, but we're going to talk about the controversial career of Rudolph Giuliani through his time as an attorney and his policies when he was the mayor of New York. So, before I close off the show, I want to give thank you to all my listeners of this podcast. Listen, a lot of you have been listening to my podcast and you've not have rated. So everybody who's listening to my podcast, who's showing support, I need you to rate my podcast. If you like it, give it 5 stars. And if you have any comments or any questions, you can go to my podcast on anchor.com and you can basically leave a message about the, you can basically give any questions, comments, anything you personally want me to talk about, you can respond on my, website on anchor.com, my podcast website. And also, if you want to, and you want to, you like the podcast content, you want to support the content, podcast even further, you can pay a donation of $10 a month if you want to. That's only if you want to. If you, pay $10 a month, it actually helps me put out better content because I can, instead of doing my podcast at home, I'll have enough money to go to the podcast studio, which I'm doing right now, and provide a better quality of content. Okay, I'm a stand-up comedian. The comedy clubs is kinda open. We have to do everything outside. I still don't feel comfortable with that because the problem is in a comedy strip, you got these comedy club owners that's not following the social distancing rules and he's putting other comedians at risk. There's a comedy booker by the name of Jeff Lawrence, and he's the owner of Laughing Buddha Comedy. He's been on the internet. He's talking about how comedy club owners are stealing from him. Comedy club owners are not social distancing, and it's actually a problem. I don't really feel comfortable being around the pack. Like, even I live in the Bronx, and even traveling through mass transit to Brooklyn is a little difficult for me. I had to change up my route. I've been taking the ferries, the new New York City ferries, and I've been taking the Metro North. Because when I take these ways of travel, there seems to be, it's not crowded and there's less people on the, it's not crowded and there's less people that's traveling on these places. And believe it or not, when you get off at Metro North, the Grand Central Station is pretty empty. Look like a damn dystopian future. That's how, is dystopian future empty? Yeah, so, follow me on my Instagram, BlackKage840. Follow me on Twitter, GhettoCalvicade. I also have a new Twitch account because I'm a gamer. My Twitch account is called JeffGamer55Ryer. Please like and follow me there. You can also follow me on my Facebook page, which is Jeffrey A. Frazier. It's online. I've already have 2,000 likes on that particular page. And finally, thank you very much. God bless, and I will see you next week.